Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to The Art of Film Funding. I'm your co-host, Claire Papin, along with Carol Dean, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding. Carol is also the founder and president of From the Heart Productions and the host of this show.
Our very special guest, director-producer Rachel Elizabeth Seed, is originally from London and is a Los Angeles and Brooklyn-based nonfiction storyteller working in film, photography, and writing. Her work has been supported by the Sundance Institute, Chicken and Egg, Pictures, NYFA, Field of Vision, the Jerome Foundation, the Roy W. Dean Grant, the Jewish Film Institute, and Jewish Story Partners, among others. Formerly a photo editor at New York Magazine, her photography has been exhibited at the International Center of Photography, and she was a camera person on several award-winning feature documentaries, including Sacred, by Academy Award-winning filmmaker Thomas Lennon. Rachel's writing has been published by No Film School, the Sundance Institute, and Talkhouse, and she's the co-founder of the Brooklyn Documentary Club, a thriving film collective with more than 300 members. And Carol, you've been and have been supporting Rachel's documentary for a very long time, The Photographic Memory, for many years, right?
Yes, Claire, we're a big fan of Rachel's work, and thank you for joining us, Rachel.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Yes, well, we want to congratulate you on the premiere of your first feature documentary, Photographic Memory, at this True False Film Festival. I'm sure you had a great time, and I'd like you to share the journey of how a photographic memory evolved from the beginning. So tell us how and what got you on the path to make this film?
Well, yes. When I started the whole thing, I was not a filmmaker by trade. I was a photographer. I was writing, and I was working as a curator at the International Center of Photography. And it was really this deep need I had to get to know my mother, who I never knew and I had no memories of. And she happened to be, not happened, I'm sure there was a bigger design behind it, but we were both in the same profession. As she was a writer, photographer, filmmaker, as was I. Well, I wasn't a filmmaker yet. And her work was housed at the International Center of Photography. And so when I heard her voice for the first time since I was a baby, when I listened to her interviewing photographers through her work, I just had a flash, a moment where I felt like I was in the room with her and the photographers in the 1970s, and all of a sudden I got this insight that time doesn't really exist and that I was able to time travel and be with her. So, and it felt so real to me that I felt like this is something I have to share with people, this experience, and I have to explore it and understand how close I can get to her through all of the essence of her that was left in all of her work. So that was sort of the inciting moment of the whole film that now exists in the world.
Wow. What a superb or sublime moment for you to recognize that, well, they say time is linear, time is flat, so you just moved back in time and you were right in the room with them?
It was unbelievable. I had never experienced anything like that before, but I think part of it was, you know, in the 70s, they had these 7-inch audio reels, and the vibration of someone's voice is recorded on the magnetic tape in a way that digital doesn't capture. And so it's really like, you know, real life essence as far as I'm concerned, but it was so real that it literally allowed me to feel like I was with them. That's how I look at it anyway.
Oh, that's wonderful. So that's when you decided I have to make this into a film, a movie.
I shared the moment with a couple of my colleagues at ICP, which was Brian Wallace, who was the chief curator, and Pauline Vermeer, who was my colleague there. And they were so taken aback by this experience I had just had that I realized it was beyond just myself, and it was something that was so otherworldly that I felt like it's a bigger story that I need to share, both for myself, but also I thought it could make an impact in some way if I was able to share it.
How fantastic. And so how did you become a filmmaker? What did you do, start taking classes?
Well, at the time, if you're a photographer, a lot of people got the Canon 5D Mark II camera, and it was the first DSLR that allowed you to shoot video. And actually, Canon hadn't even intended for that to be the case. It was almost like an accident that happened in their design. But all of us photographers embraced it, and we thought all of a sudden we have this affordable tool that we already own, and now we can make films with it. So that was the original sort of green light that I had. And then when I had the story idea, I was already telling stories in all these other mediums, but I realized it was so three-dimensional that I didn't think it could be properly told just through photography, just through writing, or just through any of the other mediums I was working in. And so I thought, okay, well, if this is a film, I better figure out how to make one. And so I literally remember Googling, how do I write a documentary treatment? And I looked up budgets. I knew one other filmmaker at the time. Now I know probably hundreds. But at that time, it was just one. And so I really started from zero. I hadn't gone to film school. And I just was like, well, I have to figure out. This thing came to me, and it needs to be a film. So how do I do this? And then it was like figuring it out from there.
How smart of you. Right. And that somewhere along that took you to starting the group in New Jersey or New York. You started a whole group of filmmakers there.
Yeah, that was in New York City. Right. I guess, you know, I had met this one other filmmaker, Josh Kriegman, who became a good friend. And the two of us were longing for film community. And we both, at that point, I think I knew maybe a couple more people, and he knew more people than I did. So we thought we should get a group together and just have like a round table and just talk and share our, you know, our struggles and our, you know, resources. And so we started that, I think it was probably 2012 or 2013 maybe. And from there, it just evolved. And my thought was this should be a more structured event. We should meet regularly. So we started to meet once a month and workshop each other's projects. And more people kept joining and joining and joining, and it was word of mouth. And by the end of my time in New York, we had hundreds of members and a very tight, strong community of people, and a very generous community as well, that people would share a lot with each other, which isn't always the case in creative communities. Sometimes people feel threatened and they keep their resources tight. But documentary filmmakers tend to be a group that are great at collaborating and sharing, and I was able to enjoy that because of that energy that we all shared.
And that is wonderful, yes. I love the way they're so open. Always open for more information, more guidance, more support. It's amazing because learning how to take criticism is not easy for many people, but documentary filmmakers are very good at it. So I want you to go more in depth about how you began to unexpectedly find your mother's materials. It's almost as if you were in the right place at the right time, and things began to really open up for you, which told you were on the right path to make this film.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I almost feel like I didn't try that hard to find her materials, and that year after year, because the project took over a decade to make, somehow naturally the materials would come to me. And so, Carol, you and I have talked about this a fair amount, but, you know, I do believe in, you know, energies outside of ourselves that are orchestrating things. And I did feel like she was somehow involved and somehow giving me these materials year after year. And they kind of trickled in. It wasn't just like, here's one big trove. So At first, it was hundreds of audio reels at the International Center of Photography, and they really welcomed me in there and were very, you know, generous there. And then I found a bag of over 100,000 black and white negatives in my dad's garage several years
later. Wow.
I found 14 journals in his garage again 2 years after that. It was only 2 years ago, actually, that I found those. And more things than you could possibly imagine, you know, photographs. People would come out of the woodwork handing me things when they found out about the project. I don't know how she created so much stuff, but it just is endless, which is wonderful, but also it creates a lot of creative editing challenges. So good ones, but you know, when you have a big volume of stuff, it just takes much longer to go through everything and decide what to use. But ultimately, it was a blessing.
That brings up the question, how can you use what you didn't use in the film? Is there any way that you can put all that together sort of in memory of your mother?
That's a great question. And I think that question allowed me to feel calmer about not using everything in the film because there's no way you could. For one thing, I think it could be a great podcast to do more with her interviews. I would love to do a photography book, and I also have been talking to ICP about doing an exhibit, and so there's many other mediums. Again, they would need to be tightly curated, and not everything obviously would make it in, but, and then lastly, her alma mater was Cornell University, and I have a thought that I would like to see if they'll take her work for their archives so that other journalism students could research her and or use her work in some way educationally. So I don't know what they'll say yet, but those are some of the thoughts that I have right now.
Oh, wonderful. Yes. How kind of you. That would be really appreciated and be there for years to come, because every year that goes by, these people that she interviewed are getting older and more important in history.
So, yeah, a lot of them are gone at this point, too.
And a lot are gone, right. Well, you must have gone through a lot of emotions, I would say, when you're meeting your mother in all these unusual ways. So I would think that might slow you down in the filmmaking process, having to absorb more new things about your mother's if you're meeting her each time anew.
Yeah, well, I mean, the interesting thing about losing someone before you at an age that you could even remember them is that the emotions are complex, because it's not like I'm missing somebody that I have a conscious memory of. I think throughout my life, it's just been more of like a feeling of emptiness and something is missing, but I don't know, I can't put my finger on it, and I don't know what it felt like to have her there. So the emotions are complicated, and it took me a very long time to actually even feel or understand what that was, and then especially be able to articulate it in the film. I think that was one of my biggest challenges, was how do I even put into words this experience I'm going through? So, it wasn't a very straightforward thing, but I think, you know, for all of us who've lost a parent or someone close to us, grief is not a linear thing. It's not something where one day you cry a lot and then the next day you're back to normal and you never think about that person again. In my case, it's been a lifelong journey. And so one of the most special things I did was I spent a whole fall transcribing her journals. Just by myself, I rented an office in Brooklyn, and I just sat there for months reading all of them and transcribing the parts I wanted to use. And that was really a beautiful moment of connection where I got to know her very deeply through her own eyes, which was so different from asking people about her. So there were just countless experiences like that throughout the years. I could write, you know, probably 10 novels about all of that. That was just one of
right.
the amazing moments.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, Now, fundraising over $1 million for a creative project is no small feat. So what strategies did you employ to secure funding for a photographic memory film?
Well, I will say, like, before I was a filmmaker, I had done a lot of grants as a photographer and as a writer. So writing grants is something I had been doing probably since my teens. And I had always had a fair amount of success doing it, probably just because I naturally love writing. And so I think when I became a filmmaker, I just continued to do that. But I think so much of the time it is about relationships, and it's about really understanding who you're asking for funds from and understanding what's important to them and their organization, and seeing if you're really aligned. But grants was just one of the things I did. I also did a Kickstarter campaign. I pitched at numerous different forums, including the Sundance Talent Forum, Sheffield Meat Market, IFP Film Week, the Brooklyn Film Festival pitch, and there's probably a few more. And so it's really about understanding what you're pitching, understanding what the core of your project is, and having a really tight package that you put together, and then being able to articulate that when you're talking to people, and then also knowing who you're talking to and making sure that you're speaking to their what's important to them. So there's many layers to it, and it's really challenging. And it's not like it was easy. It took so much work. I probably spent just as much time doing that as I did doing anything creative. And I would say ultimately months of work. Sometimes you can spend a month just writing a grant, and then you may or may not. You probably won't even get it, but you might or might not. And these days I'm much more intentional about what I apply to because I know how much time it takes, and I want to know what if I have a good chance of getting it or not, because I won't just apply to anything, as I used to just throw the spaghetti at the wall, you know.
No, now you're right. You're onto something very important here. Things that are that you fit, that your film really fits, are the most important ones to go after. Because I had a woman who won my grant, and she had applied for 5 grants and won 4 of the 5.
So wow.
That's what I said. How did you do that? And she said, I chose the grants. I maybe had 30 possible grants that I thought I would, that I knew I fit, but I thought I might be able to win. So I chose the 5 closest to where their criteria was the closest to my film. And I put everything I had into those 5 grants, and that's why she won 4 out of 5 grants. And basically, that's what you're saying. You have to really choose which grants, plural, yes, more than one, but you have to feel that you have a very good chance of winning, right?
Absolutely. And I will say sometimes, because I know a lot of filmmakers who just get so frustrated because they feel they are a good fit for something and they're still not getting it. And there definitely have been grants I've applied to where I felt, oh gosh, my film is perfect for this. And then, you know, you spend a month on the application and you don't even hear anything back. And then all of a sudden the announcement comes out and it's like, okay, well, so I think it's important also that we're realistic. There's a ton of films out there and it's extremely competitive when you're applying for grants, as I'm sure you know better than anyone else, Carol. So realistically, grants should not be the only way that people are looking for money because, honestly, the chances are not that high that most filmmakers are going to get them. And especially now there's more, consideration of demographics and, certain things that, also can boost certain applications and reduce the chances for others, which has always been the case. But so I think there's just many factors to take into consideration when you apply. I think one of the most important ones is honestly knowing people. I mean, I know when I applied to your grant, Carol, you didn't know me at all. So that was lucky on my part. But you know, for some of the grants, it really helps if you meet the people in person who are granting before you apply, if you reach out by email or call and make a personal connection so they're aware of your project, or if you have someone on your team who is established and has a track record so they know that the risk they're taking is going to most likely pay off. So I think there's many layers to thinking about it.
No, thank you for that. That's really good advice because when I wrote my book, The Art of Film Funding, I put in there that you need to make a personal contact with the grantor, right? So first of all, prime time, like 10 to 12, 2 to 4, those are the times to call. Find out who it is. Know what they have funded. Be ready to thank her for funding that film or your favorite films that she funded or he funded. And have a question not on the website. And the one thing that usually nobody will tell you is how many people applied to the last grant and how many people won. So that's a good question. But
Very
you need to get in front, on the phone with these people so you can get their vibration and they get yours.
Definitely. Yes, absolutely. I mean, we're all, as much as we want to believe that everything is 100% fair and even no matter what, we're still human beings. We're still affected by whether we like someone, whether we believe in them, whether we trust them. And so, you know, I think that's always an important factor is just making a personal connection for sure.
Likeability and trust are the two things that you have to get. That's the hurdle to get over for getting grants, getting money from anyone, really. They need to like you and trust you. So, and then I recommend that once you get them on the phone and you got your two-minute pitch of your film, what and thank you for what you do, ask your question, and then say, I will be applying, and hang up, and send a great Hallmark card to that person. So now they've had two connections with you. And
I love
that way,
idea.
It helps when they pick up your application. And I'm speaking from experience. It's wonderful. Oh, look, she did apply. Let's see what she says. Well, it's not that you automatically go to the top of the page, but it's that we know who you are, and that's really
Absolutely.
Important.
Absolutely, and nobody sends snail mail these days. So if you send snail mail, you're like 1,000% on the top of the list because it's so memorable. And who doesn't love to get a card in the mail? Someone sent me a card. I would definitely remember them.
Oh, yeah. That's the point. It's personal.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
well,
I love
now
that.
You went to Sundance and you had someone on your team who had been to Sundance before. So tell us about that experience.
Yeah, well, I had applied and just, you know, for people listening, a lot of the grants I got them on the third try. Very rarely did I get them on the first try. A couple of them I did. But and so with Sundance, I think I'd applied a couple times before we got the grant. But one of my producers had been to the producing lab at Sundance. And when she came on board my film and then we applied again, they didn't just say yes. There was a very long, probably months-long process of intensive interviews where they were getting to know me because they knew her, but they didn't know me, and I was a first-time filmmaker. And I met them in person for a long interview. We had a long interview on the phone. It was very challenging. And finally, they invited me to come to the Edit and Story Lab in 2019. And that was an incredibly transformative experience. But, it wasn't just like an easy, like, send in your grant and then get a green light. I mean, yeah, exactly, get a green light. And we didn't even get the grant right away. Even they had to meet me at the Story Lab and go through the whole process there. And then they still didn't even have an answer. And then a few months later, they told me I got the grant. And then after that, they invited me to pitch at the festival. And those were all just tremendous opportunities that resulted in me finding investors and building on that fundraising. So it wasn't just like a you know, a shoe-in. It was a long, intensive process.
I know, it's a shame that so much time has to go into the film funding, because sometimes it's more than 50% of your time.
Absolutely.
Is raising money, you know. But you're not alone,
yeah.
Because Orson Welles said he spent 95% of his time raising money and 5% making films.
I mean, it honestly feels like that, because it's funny, because when people say, what was the emotional experience of making the film? The first thing I think about is all the fundraising I did and how that was not emotional at all. It was just tons of work. I think the biggest thing for me was just all the work, the hard work, the tedious work, a lot of the time, repetitive work that went into making the film. And then the emotional part feels like, while very important personally, a smaller part of the wedge of time.
Right. Right. But look what you have. You have a life and a film, a special person to you. But she is also special to all of us now, because you've introduced us. And it's an empowering film. It also makes you feel that, that you too can tell stories. Any people watching it, you've made it look really simple, Rachel, even though I know it's not.
I guess that's sort of like, you know, with fashion design, when you see like an amazing outfit and you think, wow, that's just so simple. But actually, so much work goes into making something look simple. It's more work than you can imagine unless you've done it yourself, I think.
Right. Well, let's talk about community screenings. Are you planning to engage with audiences globally after the festival circuit? Or what are your plans?
Absolutely. Because this is my first film, at every phase of the film, I feel like I've been learning as I get to that phase, because you don't have time. Because I didn't go to film school, I don't have time while I'm producing the film or in post-production to learn all about what the next thing is going to be. So I kind of knew, but not through experience. Now that I'm in the phase of getting the film out there, I'm learning as I go, and I'm learning through experience. But I love connecting with communities, and I've been invited already just through the festival circuit by people to bring the film to communities. So I'm just getting started with that, but I'm really excited about it. And I'm going to the Speed Art Museum in Louisville, Kentucky for Mother's Day, for a special Mother's Day screening next month. And that's like one example of it. Another example is after the screening at Full Frame, a group of six or seven university students came up to me. One of them said it was the best documentary he ever saw, and he felt so emotional watching it. And they said, would I come to their photo program and present the film in their photo class? And that's another kind of screening I would love to do. And then I'm also partnering with the author of Motherless Daughters, Hope Edelman, who I'd been following for over a decade, to do a screening for women who lost their mothers when they were young, which is a community that I feel so much affinity with, having had that experience myself. So there's kind of different pockets of communities that I'm excited to share the film with. And it'll be a very different experience, whether we focus on photography or losing a parent, or, you know, also the Jewish communities is another one.
This is wonderful. These are two very important audiences, totally different. And both
mm-hmm.
would be perfect for your film. That's great.
Yeah, it's I feel like with community screenings, I'm sure filmmakers who've already gone through this process can attest, they're kind of endless possibilities, because if you think about, like, how many photo programs are there in the world, there's got to be thousands, and people love photography, so I feel like there's kind of, like, as much as I want to do of it, as much as I want to focus on it, I can. And the same goes with the Jewish communities, the same goes with communities of people who lost someone close to them. So it is, I will say, it is a ton of work, and so I am looking at, I've already applied to potentially partner with someone whose job it is to put together a community screening. Otherwise, I would probably never sleep.
You partnered with someone who has done this before?
So I haven't yet gone through with it, but I did apply for and was accepted to a program, a company that does this with communities. So I think they help you find and book and, you know, deal with all the particulars of community screening so that you can hopefully focus on other stuff while the logistics are being sorted out.
This
and I think
wonderful.
There's a few organizations that do that.
Yes, right. And the main thing is that you you don't know what your audience is yet. I mean, just think about it. You've really just shown it one time, and you have two diverse groups already, three different groups
yeah.
that you can work with, and there are probably five or six more very strong groups. It's a matter of finding those markets.
Absolutely. I will say when I did the Kickstarter campaign, which now was 10 years ago, I didn't expect that I would learn so much about my audience at that time. And to me, that was almost more valuable than the money we raised, because you hear from people who are excited about the film, and they tend to fall into certain categories. In my case, there were people who love photography that just came out of the woodworks, and they would say things like, oh, we've been playing your mother's programs, which were made in the 70s, by the way, in their school program. So the teachers, high school teachers from all parts of the country would say, you know, we still have your mother's box set, and it's my favorite program on Henri Cartier-Bresson. And so I learned, oh, there's a huge market for people who love photography, and it was very strong at that time. So things like that can really help you when you do some outreach and you kind of see who responds to it. But there's nothing like the in-person screenings, and then you really hear directly from people about who is responding and why.
Exactly. Well, because your film features lost interviews with Henri Cartier-Bresson and Garden Parks, wow, this is marvelous. That those two people alone, and you have many more in there, right? Getting into
yeah.
Photographic schools or into the photographic department of major universities should be fun and rewarding.
It's really
and,
fun. Yeah.
Yes. And financially beneficial. Now is the time for you to, I think this is a window you want to keep open a long time. Your community
Absolutely.
Screenings.
It's kind of an evergreen film in that way. It's not, you know, a timely topic. So it's
uh-huh.
in that regard, it could go on for a long time. And I learned after the, we've gone to two festivals now, and we have a couple more coming up in the next 2 weeks. But I've learned from our four screenings, what I love, one of the groups I love more than any are these teenagers and early 20s, very bright-eyed, photography loving, or you know, maybe they lost their parents or whatever it is. I love connecting with those people about it. And I would love to share more with young people, you know, as far as our audience go. And that's, they seem to be responding really strongly to the film.
Good. Good. That's going to be a lot of fun for you. I think you've got at least a year, maybe 2 years in this one phase before you do anything else because you really don't know the full audience yet.
It's true, yeah, and it does seem to be landing. I think one thing that surprised me is that, you know, when every time you apply for a grant, you get the question, who is your audience? And let's face it, most filmmakers have no idea when they're starting out who their audience is. That's a really hard question to answer unless you know from experience. So I'm learning, which makes me happy, is that people of all ages, I'm getting very young people and very elderly people and everything in between. I'm getting, you know, black people, Asian people, white people from all, you know, all races, all religions. So I'm learning about the universality of the topic. And that gives me a great amount of joy to see that it's connecting with people from all backgrounds and all ages. It's just, I love that because I think I always wanted to have a story that did that and, you know, made people feel something about their own lives and reflect on their own lives.
Well, it's interesting. I wish it, you know, if there was a way you could give a photographic class and this film is part of the class, well, how interesting that would be.
Definitely. I mean, I think it's, you know, what's funny too is that the interviews my mother did with photographers, those were for students, even though they're universal and they speak to people now on every level. She made them for mostly high school and college age students, and they went across the country and they were shown in classrooms. And she herself wrote a teacher's guide for the interviews. And so there's a nice kind of callback full circle thing in sharing the film in those environments too, because that was her initial purpose in making these, because she was working at Scholastic, a young people's book publisher. So I really enjoy that connection to sharing the film.
Well, that's a definite way that you could have a lot of fun. And even if you had a 30-minute cut, a short cut, but the class was photography, and if your mother's already written everything out, you've got it all there. Wow, exciting.
Yeah, we could use her questions from the original teacher's guide.
Yes, exactly.
She was very good at her questions.
All that lives on. It's coming back alive again. How exciting. Well, tell me,
yeah.
I just want to hear some of the things that people said at the film festival, because you mentioned something about a good review from Roger Ebert, from the man who's taken over his website.
Yeah.
Tell me about
mm-hmm.
that.
Well, we had a good audience response, and we also got good response from some press. I would say the very first person who came up to me after our first screening, our world premiere at True False, she was sobbing, and she said, "My mother is dying, and now I know I can talk to her after she's gone."
Oh, how wonderful.
I know. It was so incredibly moving to me to hear that, because that was really one of my biggest intentions, was that people could find hope for connecting with someone they lost, or that they could find a way to do it as I did, because I didn't know if I would find it, but I did, and now maybe other people can see that possibility for themselves. So that was just the first, and then right after that I had an 18-year-old young man come up to me, and he was also crying, and he said he had a stack of his father's Super 8 films, and he had lost his father 8 years ago. And he had been hesitating to look through them because he thought it would be too hard. And so then I saw he posted a couple of days later that he had started to do it, and he was able to start facing it after watching the film.
Wonderful. Isn't that great? So you're changing lives in a powerful way.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was so personally challenging what I went through to make the film emotionally. And at the end of it, I did get a relationship with my mother that I never had. And I love more than anything that people are seeing that possibility for themselves, because it's shocking to me how many people in the world have lost a parent or lost a parent young. Not that they've lost a parent, because everyone does eventually, but people who lost them at a young age, or they lost their sister or their brother or somebody very close to themselves. And you just don't expect the volume of people who've had that kind of experience, whether they were adopted, whether they, you know, lost them to death, whatever it is. So that's been really surprising. And I kind of joked with my film team at True False. I said, "I'm going to have to start walking around with a social worker, because I've done my own work and I feel like I can hold the space for all these stories, but I think some of these people really might need help." So
exactly.
I'm going to take a card with me so I can get people the help they need. But that was, you know, partly a joke. But that was the experience of connecting with people. And I'm not sure I answered your question completely.
Yes, you did. I'm so happy you're getting the results you need. You're touching people. You're opening them up to new ideas and experiencing a closeness with someone that they've lost. How wonderful is that? That's great. So we're just would love what advice that you have for filmmakers who are working on funding their film right now and producing, and what they want to know is how will this ever end, and what advice can you give them to stick with it?
Oh, gosh. I think it is a particular challenge right now because there's more filmmakers than ever, and some of the money has gotten smaller. I think right now my advice is kind of the same, would be, you know, it's all about relationships. So I would say try to go to conferences, film festivals, talk, where you can, you know, meet the panelists afterwards. You can go to a mixer and get a card and ask someone to get coffee. I think definitely making these personal connections before you apply to something, as I said before, is really important. You know, I won't say it's easy, and I think now it's even more challenging than it was in the past. But I think also getting somehow connected with philanthropists is probably one of the fastest ways to raise money, if you can, because if you apply to a grant, sometimes you have to wait for months and months before you see anything. But again, I think it's just about, you know, finding people who know, connecting with experienced producers, being in the right place to meet, you know, a lot of people. If you don't live in a big city, maybe it means traveling to New York City and attending Doc NYC, for example, where there's tons of industry people and you're going to be rubbing shoulders with them. But I wish I could say there was sort of an easy way to do it. I think it's immensely challenging work, and you have to feel that you must make a project. There's no it's black and white. It's like, it's all or nothing. Like, you're not going to quit no matter what, because it's a project that absolutely has to be made. If you don't feel that passionately about it, I think you might have a challenge getting it done. And I knew that I had to finish my project no matter what. It was literally like something I had to do no matter what. And I think a lot of us filmmakers feel that way about our projects. And you just need an immense amount of passion and, you know, the belief inside that you're never going to quit, and that you're going to find a way to do it. So I don't think you can fabricate that, you know, it's like, but I do believe that's what it takes sometimes to get it done.
And that's what it takes to win a grant. You have to show us your passion, put your heart on your sleeve, is what I say. Put some passion in that proposal. Tell me why you're going to be there for the next 5 to 7 years to make that film. It's okay. We know it's a long, hard road, but do you know that you will be there to the end? So you have to make them believe that you're in it for the long term. Nothing is going to stop you.
Exactly, and I think that's true of anything in life. You know, people respond to passion, and you know, if you don't fully believe in your project or whatever you're doing, whether you're a filmmaker or any other profession, people are going to sense that, and they're not going to come along for the ride. So, I don't think passion is something you can just, you know, invent or just, you know, pull out of thin air. But if you are passionate about what you're doing and you do feel like it's inevitable, then I think you're in the best position to get it done. And just do
you're way ahead
takes,
of everybody
know.
Else. Absolutely.
Yeah, take,
but don't
take
be,
the classes, meet the people. You know.
Yes, get out and meet the people. Listen, when I first started my business years ago, Rachel, in New York City, I had very little money, and I didn't know what I didn't know, which was you can't do that. Anyway, I was lucky. I ended up on the lucky street in New York, 46th Street, rented a floor in a brownstone, went out and bought a couch that made into a bed, got a phone, and what else? I just needed a chair and pencil and paper, and I was in business. And then I realized that in New York, they don't give you drapes like they do in California. There were no lights in the ceilings. There were no drapes. There were
oh,
all
wow.
these things. And so I went to my landlord and started explaining how little funds I had, and he started bringing stuff over and helped me get started. So, but the whole way my business took off was friendships. By walking New York, I wore out a pair of shoes in 6 months walking the streets.
I love that.
And what happened was that we didn't have a lot of money. I didn't have put my money into furniture, but I put it into film because I was buying and selling unused 35 and 16 millimeter film stock. So the guys would stop by for one thing I did invest in was martinis and a scotch and the things the guys love to have one drink before they hit the road. And we played poker at our poker table. Rachel was... three cases of 35 millimeter film, which was.
Do you have a photograph of that? I need to see that. That sounds incredible.
I wish I had a photograph. I took it as natural, you know. But the fun thing is that those people that I met, we grew up in the industry together, so that I could reach the head of Maxell, I could reach the top guy at Fuji. All of those because I knew them personally. And that's the fun about this industry. As you work and move up, you're in a group and you're all moving together. People don't leave the industry, right? They want to stay in it.
No. I would say every day a lot of my interactions are messaging back and forth with friends that I've met through Film Fatales, the Brooklyn Documentary Club, et cetera, and we're always checking in and saying, like, oh, did you get into this festival? Oh, what's going on? We're sharing important information with each other privately. Or can you believe this is happening in the industry? What should we do about it? Those relationships are incredibly vital. I wouldn't be where I am. There's no way without those. Absolutely, we help each other, and we come up together. It's vitally important.
Yes. And we have to get back to going to film festivals, going to events, and having events. So I'm working on an event for the summer where we can all meet together and just chat and talk and have fun.
I love that. Can I share something about another thing that's helped me?
Please.
So, and, you know, just thinking about it because I'm talking to you right now, you know, it's not just, you know, meeting people and then figuring out how they're going to give you funds. You know, people can see through that kind of transactional interaction. For me, it's been finding mentors as well, people who've gone through all of it. And Carol, you've been one of those people for me. And so has Kirsten Johnson, who I connected with when she gave a workshop in New York a few years ago. And we've stayed in touch, and she became an executive producer on my film. But it's really finding the people who you admire for what they're doing and what they've created in their lives and becoming friends with that person and staying in touch and learning from their path. And it's not a one-way street. You know, they need to also be learning and benefiting from that relationship as well. But I think it's finding those people ahead of you who have gotten where you want to go or who live in the world that you, the way you want to live with integrity, compassion, kindness, whatever it is, whatever your values are, and just staying in touch with those people. I think that's been immensely powerful for me because you can see sort of the road ahead in a place you want to go and how you want to get there. And so, yeah, Carol, you've just been incredibly generous throughout the years with your time. And you know way more about my life than a lot of people do because I've talked to you not just about film but about everything. And so, yeah, I just think that's another really important piece to getting to the next step as an artist.
And you're so right. Thank you for that, Rachel. And Claire, Claire and I both just love what you've done and the film you've made. And so we hope that you'll come back in 6 or 8 months and tell us about your new distribution and doing screenings around the country and around the world, and what you have found about your audience. That's the thing, is, and that's probably why you love that early Kickstarter, because you were identifying your audience back then.
Yeah, and it's really exciting when you see people. It's like you make something behind the scenes, and you have no idea who is going to connect to it and how. You could guess. I could say, oh, sure, photographers will love this. But it's not until you actually are in a theater and they've seen it and they are reacting that you actually know who your audience is. And that's something
yes.
I've been learning. And that's
yes.
kind of a really fun part. It's scary because you think, well, are they going to respond to it? But once they do, then it's, you just feel like, okay, I've done something right because they are responding to it. So I think that's an exciting moment when you get to finally bring it out into the world.
And this is going to continue for you because as you go to more festivals, be present, be there, have shields, have friends there to help you talk to people, because your that audience will tell you what they saw in your film, what it meant to them, and you'll be surprised how many new avenues of distribution you will find that people that really are want to see your film.
Yes, and it just hearing you say that, it's, my wheels are turning like, okay, who can I hire to help me with this? Because this sounds like
yes.
a lot of work.
Yes, it's a lot of work, but you need people with you because you don't want to miss any comments. And just everybody always feels timid, you know, afterwards. So they need people
oh, yeah.
that will walk up to them and say, how are you doing? Did you like the film? What did it mean to you? And collect that information.
Yes,
get
I did
my,
hear one person
get Carol
say
Joyce
would,
to come. She'll help.
Oh, yeah.
You.
That's a great idea. I heard one filmmaker say they leave out, like, cards or something so people can get in touch and sign up for a newsletter. Like, you know, just trying to
okay.
make the most of, you know, I probably, there's hundreds of people in most of these audiences, and a lot of them leave and you never hear from them again, but you could figure out a way to stay in touch or have them stay part of the journey. So I think that's a really good point that I haven't been doing yet.
Well, I'll help you with we can design something to put on the seats and that talks about your film is available for screenings and you need comments. You're looking for testimonials, connections, screenings. And let's make a list of what to ask for.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea for all filmmakers who are out there with their film and trying to figure out their audiences. That's a really good idea.
Okay, Rachel, then we thank you so much, and we will be looking forward to hearing good ideas, good news from you on the success of your film.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the talk today and for everything that you've done and that you do for filmmakers. And I think a short film or a film should be made about your time in New York City with this booze table made out of film boxes. I can't get that image
film
out of my head.
That's
so
a good
great.
Idea.
What
the life
fun.
Of Carol Dean.
Okay. Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you, Rachel. What a joy it's been to know you all these years. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Okay.
Yes.
Bye. Thank you, Claire.
Bye. Oh, thank
Bye.
You. Bye. And Rachel, thank you for all the wisdom you share and the heart that you put into it.
Thank you so much, Claire. Thanks so much. Mm.
All right. Be well, everyone.
Thank you.
You too.
Now, in
Goodbye.
Its second edition, Carol Dean's popular book, The Art of Film Funding, has 12 new chapters to cover all areas of film financing and how to avoid expensive pitfalls. Learn how to start with an idea and end with a trailer. How to make an ask for money. Create your story structure and your trailer. Legal advice. Fair use. Successful crowdfunding, how to ask for music rights, and what insurance you can't shoot without. Available on Amazon under Carol Dean and at FromTheHeartProductions.com. I want to remind our listeners that David Raiklin is a brilliant and talented award-winning musician who scores films and can compose music for a trio or for a full orchestra. David is a very good friend to the independent filmmaker and comes highly recommended by From the Heart Production. If you need music to help tell your story, please contact him at davidraiklin.com. That's David, RAIKLEN.com. And Carol and I want to thank you for tuning in to The Art of Film Funding. Please visit our website at FromTheHeartProductions.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good luck with your films, everyone.